You're on Team Human, our last best hope for peeps. I'm Douglas Rushkoff, here to stand with you against autonomous technologies, runaway markets, and weaponized media that threaten human cognition, solidarity, and survival. It's time to play together. This is Team Human. Our guest today, a great old friend of mine, mimeticist and social change agent, Dr. Laszlo Carafia.
Memes are your filter to reality, and they are an evolving filter because they attract new memes, so your filter is always changing, always evolving.
Laszlo, a mimetic engineer for Culture 2, is going to break down the weaponized media now paralyzing so much of our thought and tell us what we have to do collectively to build our immunity to thought viruses. It's time to intervene on behalf of people. This is Team Human. Last week, I went out on a limb and suggested that if Trump were to get truly cornered, he might do some really scary stuff. And this week, after America's bombed a Syrian airport in retaliation for them using chemical weapons on their own people, I'm getting a lot of email from people asking me, is that what you meant? Is this that great distraction that Trump is doing on the same moment where the Russia investigation is beginning to reveal true collusion between his people and the Russians to hack a Democratic campaign committee? On the eve that we're extraditing a Russian hacker from Spain who apparently has information that will expose this scandal once and for all? Maybe. I don't know. And that's my point. I've read your emails. I've read the news stories. Yes, Syria, Russia, Trump, even Iran and North Korea are all involved in maneuvering around what has just happened. Sure, there's a collusion scenario. That would be that Russia and the United States planned the chemical weapons attack together as a way of creating a pretext for a disagreement between Russia and the United States, as a way to make it seem implausible for Russia and Trump to have actually worked together to make him president. Crazy? Sure, that's a crazy scenario, but it was floated even by Lawrence O'Donnell, a journalist on MSNBC, although he was also floating it less as a way of spinning a theory than showing us that it's really hard to know what's going on. When you have an administration that is so willing to lie about anything at the drop of a hat, that when they get up and say, this is what's happening and this is why we did it, they have no credibility. We can't know. It's blah, 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 blah. I mean, sure, if you got some pictures from CNN or Associated Press or somebody, okay, something happened over there, but it's really, really hard to know what. Why would Russia get involved in a collusion scenario like that? How would that benefit them? Well, maybe they've got some leverage they're trying to apply to Assad now to say, look, we could try to push you out. Who knows? You know, meanwhile, the New York Post and a dozen other semi-respectable news outlets came out with a bizarre fake news story about Russia, Syria, and Iran drawing a red line that if the United States were to cross it again by taking military action against Syria, that then they would do some terrible thing to us, that they would attack back. But that story was from nowhere. That story was from a fringe Arabic website with no sources, no official word. It's nothing that any ambassador of any of these countries has said. And meanwhile, perhaps more reputably, the Associated Press says that Russia knew about the attack before it happened. Not our attack on Syria, but Syria's attack on its own people. That Russia had a drone over the site where the chemical weapons were dropped, and then dropped its own bombs on the hospital where the victims were taken, presumably to cover up the evidence of a chemical weapons attack. But I guess if they were covering up the evidence of a chemical weapons attack, then they wouldn't really want America to know it all, in which case they weren't trying to create a pretext for America to be upset because America wasn't supposed to know anyway. So what's true? What's true is that this is war, people. This is war, and it's all criminal. This is the same old war that we've been having for a couple of thousand years, where monarchs send peasants off to their deaths using myths of divine providence, distraction, and fake news of cannibalism on the other side, or babies burning, or witchcraft, or Lord knows what, to get people to die for reasons that we probably never know. Some territorial dispute, some business problem, some family feud. Why use chemical weapons? And why are they so much worse than the other ones? Well, chemical weapons are really good for terrifying people. You know, if you're going to get bombed, you kind of hear it, you get blown up, and you're pretty much dead. Chemical weapons, you kind of don't know when they're around. You can't really sleep at night because, ooh, were there chemical weapons coming? And the effects are so long-lasting and devastating. You're blind or sick or, poisoned for the rest of your life. It's a scarier kind of weapon. You know, it's not scary to troops. You know, troops, soldiers, they've got gas masks. It doesn't work in war anymore. It only really works against civilian populations. It's a form of terrorism, only the kind of terrorism really that governments use on their people more than terrorists would use on a regime it doesn't like. So yeah, I got all your questions. And you know, I've actually started answering these emails all the same way. You know, I really don't know. Did Trump collude with Russia? I don't know. I don't think so. Was it time to coincide with China's visit? I don't know. You know, is it just an opportunity to park nuclear gunships nearby North Korea? I don't know. And I don't think I can know. Yes, we are living under a presidency where the lies come so regularly, we can't even trust the very basics of what he and his representatives are saying. Yes, the painful deaths of all of these people could in fact be an exercise in distraction from prosecution. The FBI is going to be questioning a Russian hacker that was just extradited from Spain, and there could be the equivalent of scandal bombshells dropping from that this new war action would distract us from. But since most of what we're seeing in the news is either distraction or speculation, I genuinely believe it's our job as Team Human to resist the temptation to go down those rabbit holes. You know, that's what keeps us staring at our screens all night instead of engaging with one another, forging coherence and solidarity, and addressing real local civic issues that we can address with our own two hands. I'm not telling you to ignore the news, but I am saying we can't use this news as an excuse to ignore one another. You're on Team Human, coming to you alive from the basement media squad here at the Laboratory for Digital Humanism at Queen's College. Playing for us today, cultural alchemist Dr. Laszlo Karafiev. So, Laz, I'm seeing so many articles now on weaponized memetics that people seem to finally understand what we've been talking about for 20 years.
Exactly.
Which is that there are memes out there, always out there, competing for our attention and to get us to spread them. Why do you think it's taken people so long to grok the meme?
So I think that this is the time when the proverbial stuff, you know, hits the fan, right? So suddenly, stuff that was not seen, suddenly seen, like something was not visible, now it's visible, right? We talked about it for 20 years that these are the invisible stuff out there in the air, you know, like all over the place. Don't you guys see it? And now it actually started to affect like global politics, right? You guys have a meme for a president now, right? So some people are like, oh, really? Yeah, I really can see something's changing now, right? So I think that there is a tidal wave that has been growing for, you know, maybe for a few tens of thousands of years.
Right. So for people that aren't too familiar with memes, I remember in the 90s after I'd written Media Virus and then a bunch of essays on memes, I was at Timothy Leary's house doing a radio interview from his phone. And he's sitting there probably smoking a cigarette or something, listening to me talk. And he had always been telling me not to use the word meme because no one knows what a meme is. And he heard me on the radio interview have to explain what a meme is. And he starts laughing at me and pointing at me to say, and we get off and he says, any word that you have to explain what it means every time you use it is a useless word.
Exactly. And that's how I felt for the past 15 years. I jumped on the meme wagon about 1997 and 20 years ago, exactly. Wow. And I realized that when I started my company around memes in 2003, using the word meme didn't make it more accessible. It made it more, you know, opaque and you know, less understandable. But, you know, for us, it was so important that we actually use the meme's eye view, right? Which is a very important concept that we talk about. That for us, you know, the meme was the water that we swam in, right? But exactly up to basically, I think 2016, you really had to explain what a meme is.
And for now, how are you explaining a meme? A meme is an idea that wants to be replicated. How do you talk about a meme?
With the potential to spread. Yeah, an idea with the potential to spread. And I really like which I just read it recently in an article, that the memes are the IED of culture. And for me, that really sort of summarized. Explosive device that people by hand and, you know, by whatever you find, you know, in your basement, you put together, put it out there. 99% of the time, nothing happens. And 1% of the time, it blows up the whole building. Right.
Right. And now a meme is not just a picture on Instagram with words on the bottom. It's not just a picture of Donald Trump yawning and someone putting the word cat under it.
No, it's basically thoughts and ideas in our minds. And I do a lot of work with the unconscious these past 2 years. And basically, I do meme research now in the unconscious. And I found that we have archetypes, and the archetypes hold the memes in our heads, in our minds, right? If you go and take people to trance and start a conversation around certain ideas, and you can access their ego parts, let's call them ego parts now, basically Gestalt work does this, you know, in regular consciousness. It's so much more powerful if you go under into the subconscious, and then you have these archetypes. The archetype of a father or a mother or a grandmother or any other a friend or relative or even very outwardly creatures, and they hold memes. Like they somehow get memes in your mind, and those memes that they have work as magnets for other memes, right? So if you have the archetype, let's say the hero, or you have the archetype of the victim archetype just brings in all the memes that are great for the expression of the victim archetype, right? So this is how the mind works in the subconscious, and this is pretty much how something similar works in the cultural territory where memes are attract each other, they are sort of creating a filter bubble, and suddenly you have a meme filter around you that you're watching your word with, and you just attract all the other memes that are you know, that wants to be in your meme filter. So that's one of the most important ideas I think around meme is that they are your filter to reality, and they are an evolving filter because they attract new memes. So your filter is always changing, always evolving.
And then once we move into a digital space, an interactive space, I mean, which originally might have been fax machines, but now is Twitter and Facebook and beyond, memes take on a slightly different quality. I mean, not just in that they're spreading, but the internet itself, as many of us argued from the early days, the internet is kind of more fact-based. It's more of a nonfiction medium than it is than like movies. You know, it's not, people are not involved in these giant fictional experiences. They're based, they're having factoid-based experiences. And I call them factoid because the facts don't have to be true. It's more like a gossip, though, or tidbits,
truthiness.
Or things. Truthiness. But it's not, truthiness still almost comes from it almost describes the perspective of the propagandist or the disinformant. And it's not that. It's that, you know, I used to say this to marketers all the time, you know, no one on the internet cares about the Keebler elves. They care if there's a rat hair on the Keebler elf cookie. It's, and because the rat, and I believe me, you, if you have a truthful meme that we've changed the color of the hats on the Keebler elves, it's not going to spread. If I make a fake meme picture of a rat hair on a Keebler cookie, I promise you I could get thousands of shares exactly. of that false thing. So when people are so confused now about fake news and real news and false news, it's like the fake or realness doesn't matter. It's the memes themselves don't really have a truthiness index determining their spread or not.
Exactly. And just a side note on fake news, I think the problem with fake news is that those people are complaining who used to have an institution of fake news, right? Just because you're CBS in the 1960s, it's still fake news, right? It's just your news.
Well, it's not as fake.
That's your point of view, man. Like you know, people in, yeah. in that other country that, you know, like your country invaded, they would probably think it's fake news, right? So it's like, it's just a point of view, right?
Yeah, but you can't, or maybe you are, but I don't think you can make an equivalency between the truth level of a BBC researched something that's based on, you know, journalistic discipline and second sources and deciding what's true and what's not versus a kid in his basement deciding, you know, that Pepe the Frog is the Messiah.
I love it that you still defend humans against the memes, and I love it. You're on team human, right? Awesome. I'm on team meme, but...
You're on team human. No, but there's two different things at play here.
Yeah.
Something's virulence as a mimetic construct. Its spread may have nothing to do with its level of truth, but there is still an objective reality that we can attempt to communicate or attempt to obfuscate.
Exactly.
So when you know, Donald Trump says, I know that Obama was tapping my phones, I mean, I get there's a level of truth to it in that if Obama's agency, which even though he doesn't run it, say the NSA, was tapping a phone of a Russian and Trump happened to be speaking to that Russian, then yeah, your phone call was tapped.
Exactly.
It wasn't that the president was tapping your phone, but I get how you,
exactly.
in your constellation of the universe, why you perceive it.
And
that
those
way.
Those little tappings can lead to wonderful things. For instance, the whole Brazilian scandal that brought down the government and nearly the whole country when the big oil company turned out to be, you know, handing out like millions of dollars, that actually started with this type of a tapping. There was one guy on the phone who was bragging about something and the other guy was tapped. And then check this out. The FBI guy, the local FBI guy who was listening to this, he said, I know this voice. Because he was an air traffic controller before. And he was a pilot. So the guy worked at the air traffic control. Remember the voice. Got the voice going. And the whole thing started from that single tapped call.
I know. And now when you've got, you know, your Samsung televisions listening into you and your neighbors and everybody else, I mean, my God, what's going to get heard? Once they get better at computerized scanning of all the files for word choice and...
And of course, Facebook is scanning the words that you put in and then delete before you actually post something, right? Fun fact.
So now, you know, we know that Trump's side, or Trump's followers, if not Trump himself, was much more willing to engage with memetics than the Clinton side, which was still stuck in traditional opposition research and traditional narrative and character. Why do you think that they were so much more ready and willing to play with this almost occult-like memetic sensibility?
I think they were the IED people, right? So they basically, they just grabbed onto anything that
Because they were more like the independents without the money, without the...
without any resources, you know, give us the least costing, the, you know, resources, right? And then the whole idea of memetic evolution was at core of the whole Trump campaign, right? So they understood what we've been preaching for the last 20 years, that you're not able to be a meme master. Only memes can spread that are at that moment are able to spread, because they can actually get into the stream on the top of the wave. So what you actually need to do is you have to figure out the general direction, right, of the evolution that you want the evolution to take. And then in that general direction, start to produce multiple thousands of memes, right? And then when you see which ones are actually evolving, then put some evolutionary energy, in this case money, you know, behind it. So the whole idea is they basically, I think, got to the point when they realized that it's really not about them. And that's the whole structure of the memes that people have to understand, that it's really not about the humans, it's about the memes, right? Even if it's in our own mind. So that's why people are confused about it. Like, okay, how do I have this creature in my own mind that has its own agenda? And it has. The agenda is to spread and to take over more minds.
Right. That's why when I look at Donald Trump, I say, look, Donald Trump was not elected president. I mean, the person, it doesn't matter. Donald Trump jumped into, when we both called it this, jumped into the standing wave of memetic culture.
Exactly.
And rode that
exactly.
to the presidency. He reflected back on people what was going on.
And took on whatever it was thrown at him, right?
The one thing, the one place where skill does come in, it seems, is in the iterative process you're describing. So Trump might throw out 5 memes a day. Oh, this one lied about that. Oh, I just saw Arabs cheering 9/11. Oh, the Hillary Clinton just fell off her thing and has, you know, scabies or something. You know, oh my God. And then you see, oh, this one caught on.
Okay,
so now that one's going in my speech.
Exactly. You know,
and it's the same as a comedian. Which got the less? What got the chance? Lock her up. Lock her up. That meme is working. They're chanting it. It's a meme. I'm going to bring it.
That's it.
That goes in every show now.
Exactly. So just have the loop going. Have the loop
right.
going. Have
now,
the feedback loop
now,
going.
But the thing is, that works for someone who doesn't care what they're going to run on.
It also works at someone who's coming from the outside to the castle, right?
Right.
So the question is, how does it work from inside the castle?
Right.
You know, once we won, and once we actually have to care about something, once we have to stand by something that we cannot just, you know, just go and take a step away from the next day because,
right.
oh, it wasn't me. Then what happened?
Right. So then the problem for me, and this goes back to, again, to 1994, the first media virus I wrote about was the Rodney King tape, and how the Rodney King tape unleashed this massive surge of anger and culture because all these black people were being beaten by cops in Los Angeles, and it led to riots all over America, that one videotape of a black guy getting beaten by white cops. Now, it's not a controlled release. That's a hidden agenda in popular culture that's going to come out. So once we start playing with memes, things seem to be entirely less intentional and predictable.
And chaotic.
And chaotic, right. So if we trust, as I try to, if we trust culture and let culture express itself, then after a potentially turbulent period, then we should end up with more self-regulated memetic activity and progressive thought and all that. But right now it looks like, no, if you're going to let memetic sort of natural memetic chaos emerge and lead the conversation of our culture, then we're stuck in angry white guys on computers. It doesn't seem to be the culture that I was imagining. The memes that I thought would naturally emerge in a viral culture would have been permaculture, smart drugs, local currency. But
exactly.
Those are not the memes that are coming through.
Exactly, because you're coming from a higher ground, right? And circling back to the unconscious and to these archetypes and to these trauma as the meme magnets for the personal mind, for the personal unconscious, whatever will stuck there are the ones that are resonating with their own initial wounds, with their own wounded heroes and other wounded archetypes. Right.
Right. So if you're a white guy and your dad was a drunk and got yelled at by the mother, and now you've watched Oprah and found out that you're some enemy, and just for playing a video game where you shoot people, you're a bad person, and this one's going to get a job because they're a woman or they're black and they're not white. Hey, wait a minute, I'm wounded. And that anger
is going to come out. That's just sucking in all these memes. Exactly. That's the main lesson from the Trump campaign, is that let the memes decide, right? And once the memes decided, because the meme is a reflection of the human mind, of our collective unconscious, right? So it's, you can see it as the level of consciousness, the unconscious, and the culture. And this is how they go back and forth, like from the unconscious to the culture, from the culture to the unconscious. And of course, you know, we would like to see something, you know, like going towards the higher ground, that actually would mean that everybody has to take responsibility for their own memes and for what's spreading, right? So the only way to get out of this and to go towards the higher ground, the permaculture and the self-regulating economies and, you know, the good communities, is when I take responsibility for my memes, right? When I said, okay, why do I have these memes? Why do I want more of these memes? And why do I want to spread these memes, right? So what's in me that wants to do this? Like, basically do a self-analysis of memes, right? In a way of, you know, getting friendly with my own subconscious, getting friendly with what's going on in my head. And then right. I can be somebody who will not spread these things, right? My favorite example is that 80% of the misogynist memes are spread by women out of outrage. Right? So if everybody would start to stop spreading misogynist memes, like 80% of the memes would disappear, right? Because they don't get that when they spread it on, it spreads.
Well, right. It was like, it sort of reminds me of the Hillary Clinton campaign when they come out with, oh, these deplorables. You know, they come up with they do their opposition research and find out the word deplorable, that we all think that they're deplorable. And they don't realize that in the memetic landscape, the so-called deplorables are going to grab that as a badge. The same way that Hillary, you know, nasty woman. You know,
exactly. They should learn from their own constituency, right?
Right.
That this is how it works, and it works. Okay, we are the nasty women. Yeah, everybody's a nasty woman now, of course. Yeah, let's do it. Let's just band together as nasty women, right? Nasty women. This is something that really, the idea that you're not in control of this cultural phenomenon it sounds easy to say, but it's very, very easy for those people who actually earn their paychecks by supposedly controlling message, right? Staying on brand. That's the whole idea. It doesn't work. It's an illusion. Just as an illusion of controlling reality is an illusion. If once you were able to surrender yourself to the idea of the memes, then you would be able to actually see the world and see all this chaos and start to see some type of order in the chaos. But that order will always be a very sort of loose and soft-handed approach, right? This is what we are seeing here, right? Is that, like, to grab on, let go, grab on, let go. This works, doesn't work. This other works, maybe. Like this, oh, this one works.
Right.
Okay, let's go with that. Oh, now it's like, you know, spread into, like, forked into three other memes. Okay, which one of those work? So it's a time-consuming. Yeah.
It's also, it's a very human process that you're suggesting people do. The first thing that's human about it is, we almost dispense with the data. In other words, I want to promote local currencies, say, or permaculture, one of these great ideas. It doesn't matter. All the facts about it now, all the things that I think have brought me to it, don't matter. I have to accept now that this is not on a felt level. This was not a scientific decision. This was a mimetic impulse. So I have to go, okay, as a much softer, squishier subconscious place, why do I really want a permaculture? Why do I really want it?
Exactly.
In other words, from a felt level, not for the care of the future generations. What does it get? Oh, it gets me to slow down. It gets me to stop worrying about a certain thing. I can think, I'm not hurting the planet anymore, which always
exactly.
bothers me, the way I dig into the ground and I pavement bothers me, all this stuff. Then
yeah.
I start to get into a deeper felt place. So that, for one, is a hard, difficult human
exactly.
thing to do. Second is, in the way you're talking about memes, is once you launch a meme, it's not yours anymore.
Exactly.
You know, I came up with the media virus meme, media virus. Nobody knows that, you know, and it's because it worked. People know the ones they credit me with the ones that no one cares about, but no one's going to credit me with the ideas that actually
exactly,
got out
because
there.
They just grabbed onto it and it
right.
was theirs right away, right? That's
right.
how the meme
Social
works.
Social media was another
exactly.
one. I mean, where do I get my penny for every time someone uses that word?
Exactly.
It'd be great. But you got to let go of it, too. So those two things. One, to admit it's all soft and squishy, and all of our policy papers and all of our research aren't the real reason we made our decision. Exactly. Right? We did it on an emotional one. And then second, to be able to launch things and not have control.
Exactly.
This feels like really hard stuff, in particular for the left, to do. And easy stuff for the right, because they're all libertarian and Hayek and Cadillac-y and, you know, everything's natural and it's all going to happen. The left is like, oh, no, we have to control ourselves.
Exactly.
We've got to make sure and what's being paid for and whose credit.
And we're
going to lose as long as we think that way.
Exactly. And from the other side, it's so important that once a meme is out, you cannot stop a meme, right? Try to put efforts into stopping a meme only gives it energy. So you really have to use an Aikido approach, right? When you just let the meme roll and you would like use the meme energy to go back with the same thing or a different thing or a modified thing, right? It's not how do we stop a meme, wrong thinking, right? You never can stop a meme, right? It's out there. It'll run its course, right? But you actually have to get into the mindset of the kung fu master or the jiu-jitsu master that would say, like, okay, how do I use the energy, what's coming against me, to actually use it to create with a mimetic move, how to create my own sort of response to it, right? So never to, you know, hit reply. It's always respond, which is like, you know, take your time, figure it out, use the energy.
Before we go, and let me be blatant about this. I mean, I would love for you to be serving progressive America right now.
Yes,
when they're
sir.
Putting on pink hats is about as far as that side has gotten in its understanding of mimetics. It's time. You know, the right, the radical right, if that's even what they are, they've got Pepe the Frog. They got an ancient Egyptian friggin' meme that they don't even understand and don't have to. It works. It's
exactly
deep in
they
there.
Don't have to. That's the key point there, right? It's just they don't have to. It's just it works, right? That's what the left have to understand. The progressive has to understand there is no control. Letting go of the control, just let the memes take its course, make sure that the general direction is okay, and then just, you know, roll with the punches, roll with the waves, be in that always changing the standing wave.
And if I could convince the Democratic Party or Bernie Sanders revolution people to bring you in, say, as a mimetics special, what would you do? How would you start with them?
Basically, what we can do is we can do snapshots of certain parts of culture that we can actually create a meme map that shows how the currents are working now, how the waves are coming in and going. And then from those snapshots, you can actually build up a strategy that actually shows these directions, right? Answers the question of what the memes want. Right, so we can actually take the meme's eye view and what memes do the memes want, right? It's not about like what we want or what will hurt the other person, how you can actually be part of the current, right? And this is something that you can do often and then basically be part of the cultural evolution, right? Be somebody that can take a chance of spreading and you know, taking a bigger and bigger part or ratio of the memes that are spreading, right? That's the kind of the idea that you're the ones who's like always trending, right? Because if you're in the trend, you're in the wave, then that's where you have to be, right? It's really like a surfer, that type of a very fluid balance that you're surfing the meme wave and you're constantly reacting and you're constantly leading and you're reacting and you're leading, like basically using everything that is in you as knowledge, but also, you know, making sure that you let everything go, right? It's like very interestingly, like the knowing everything and the really releasing into the not knowing. Like,
can the surfer who wants to go in a particular direction ever beat the surfer who's willing to just go wherever the waves are taking him?
So the question that I want to answer is more like can you direct the memetic evolution?
Right.
And the only way to do that, if you have the memes eye view, and the only way that you can, if you're in the flow, right? So the answer is no. If you're standing, you know, on the bank of the river, right? You have to jump in. Like you have to be part of it in order to make sure that you can actually start to swim, right? You'll never be able to do anything from the bank of the river saying, oh, those are bad memes. I'm not going in there. Like, just getting dirty. You know, I'm not doing that, right? That's not the way. Like you have to probably swim up to the source and, you know, and start something from over there.
You got to jump in the river.
Exactly.
And join Team Human.
Finally.
Thank you, Lars.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Team Human. Playing for us today was cultural alchemist Dr. Laszlo Karafiath. You can find out more about him and his memetics techniques at Culture 2 Inc. or go to teamhuman.fm where you'll have links to his work. It's been a pleasure engaging with you today. I know these are scary times, but the more we stick together, the more coherent we can be, the more we look into each other's eyes and forge ahead, the stronger we will be. Team Human is a project of the Laboratory for Digital Humanism at Queens College, CUNY. We're supported by our listeners who can go to teamhuman.fm and find the virtual coin slot to support us either with a one-time contribution or even a regular gift. We're also out there looking for funds. If you've got any good ideas of organizations who might want to support us or radio stations that might want to play us, we are all ears. Come to teamhuman.fm and hit the contact button. I'm Douglas Rushkoff. Thanks for listening. You're on Team Human, our last best hope for peeps.